Hello, you're very welcome to Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our team here at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, my colleagues Joe McGrady, Sandra Hurley and Micheál Lehan. And Joe, Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan has been making lots of news this week, hasn't he, with his three cabinet memos, no less,
yes,
on controlling immigration. What's the plan, broadly, and what's his timetable for changing the system?
Well, speaking of timetable, they finally got to cabinet because they had been trailed at least out back as far as the previous Sunday in the Sunday newspapers. These three memos that he was bringing, obviously concerning the time it takes to get citizenship for somebody who comes to Ireland, the time it takes, the requirement to pay something towards your accommodation if you're working, and the third one, which
family reunification,
of course, yeah, which has been a very tricky issue as well. So they're now out there. We've seen the reaction to them. They're not going to be immediately acted on yet, and of course everything. He's keeping a close eye then on what's happening in the UK as well. And it seems when the UK takes action on these things, Jim O'Callaghan, based on the close relationship he has with the Home Secretary over there, will be reacting in tandem, or certainly very quickly afterwards. Because, of course, as he's pointed out a number of times, the bulk of claimants coming here now seeking asylum are coming down through Northern Ireland. But as he has said, that that the UK are claiming that an awful lot are going the other way into the UK using the common travel area as well.
And his argument, because there's been various accusations whenever the Taoiseach to Simon Harris, Sandra, whenever he was saying the rate of migration to Ireland was too high. Minister O'Callaghan saying the same thing, but he's saying it's not that he's against migration, he's for migration and he wants to see more of it. It's just the rate of our population growth is 1.6%, seven times the EU average, and that's why he's got to bring in these measures to slow it down. It sounds so reasonable, doesn't it?
Well, I think he had his facts and figures ready to go. All those facts about the population growth and also the entrance from the UK across the border. But there's no doubt that this flurry of announcements from the government and from Jim O'Callaghan, these have all been about sending out the signal about migration. And it's not just, it's the signal, I think, is supposed to reach two audiences. One, a domestic audience where some people feel that the rate of inward migration has been too high, that there's a capacity problem in relation to housing and everything else, but also an audience abroad, people who might want to come to Ireland, who might think that the benefits here are pretty generous relative to other countries. So this is all about signalling on that front. In relation to collecting money from asylum seekers in state-provided accommodation, we know that the briefings for by officials to government are that this is going to be really difficult to enforce, really difficult to collect. You cannot evict people from accommodation. They have a legal right to it. So you'd have to try and go to the courts to try and get the money if people don't want to pay it. And it's going to cost loads of money to implement. It's not about raising revenue. It's about talking tough on migration.
It's a signal then. Is it performative, I suppose, is the question. Because one of the things you have to ask, Micheál, we have that open border with Northern Ireland. We have the common travel area between ourselves and the UK. And from next year, we're going to have the EU Migration Pact. And I know the numbers have already been falling for this year before these new measures were announced by the minister. But the question is, I suppose, how much really the government here really has levers that can control a lot of the migration we're seeing here.
Yeah, and there was an acceptance from Jim O'Callaghan that any possibility or prospect or suggestion that people could be sent back to Britain if they come in over the border through Northern Ireland, that's just not going to happen. That's ridiculous. He said the most you can hope from what he's trying to ensure is happening, that you have some cooperation between the Irish and the British governments on this issue. And also taking, I mean, a fairly strident tone throughout. It became tetchy at one point when it was put to him that the income threshold that would be required for people to unify their families here, to bring members of their family to this country if they're working here, is now above the starting point at which it is for a guard. So are you saying a guard can't sustain their family here? At which point he kind of hit back and said, it would be great if everyone could come here. That would be very virtuous. But that's just not the case. And it was about balancing things. But there's no doubting the tone that Jim O'Callaghan is striking is kind of at odds with what Micheál Martin was saying going into cabinet. You could say looks a little less comfortable with this, who was describing all of this, of course, as a modest tightening up. But in some ways, while we did see a lot of detail in some instances, yesterday. You don't really see the full extent of this until you see that new piece of legislation, which is due to be published before the end of the year, which will tie all these pieces together.
We're expecting a lot of things before the end of the year at this stage, aren't we? We'll come back to that. It was interesting what former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was saying in his column in the Sunday Times at the weekend, Sandra, though, as well. And this follows, of course, the Future 40 report. And he's saying, you know, because he is, as well, had been criticised in his time as Taoiseach for saying that immigration here was too high. But he was also saying, if you want to bring down immigration, that's, you know, that can be a policy aim. But you also then, you need to have a reasonable debate, and there have been calls for debate, about the trade-offs. Maybe working longer and not retiring at 65 because there aren't enough workers in the economy to pay the taxes to keep the lights on. Maybe it'll be paying more for your childcare because there aren't as many childcare workers around the place, or carers to mind older people. And maybe, yeah, so these are going to be the real trade-offs if, you know, we are going to control immigration.
Yes, and I think that's the balancing act that the government is trying to do. On the one hand, they are saying also that they're going to extend the number of these critical visas that are extended to, in an area where there's a shortage of skills. But what about the unskilled workers who come in and do so much important work? You mentioned cleaners, carers in particular, childcare workers, those looking after our elderly and incapacitated.
Farm labourers, yeah.
100%. Of course, there is an issue about where to house all those people. That is a problem. But the economy is booming. We need the labour. But the government is also saying that they feel that there is too many. And this is very much coming from Jim O'Callaghan. There are too many people coming here who are economic migrants rather than genuine asylum seekers. He keeps trotting out the figure that 80% of asylum seekers are turned down in the first instance. So they're really trying to say to people to stay away unless you genuinely have a reason to be here.
I suppose it was interesting yesterday too when he spoke about all forms of state accommodation, and that included tents. So even if you're staying in a tent and you are working, you'd be expected to make a contribution. As well as that, making it very clear that people who are here from Ukraine, that period that they're here under kind of a temporary directive, that will not count as those years in the lead up to applying for citizenship. So it could be a long wait for the many people from Ukraine who, it seems anecdotally judging around the country, who could be here for a long time. One final point on all of this, if you look at the words that Simon Harris used repeatedly around migration policy, he talks about the need for common sense. That's an interesting two words, because that is one that irks me, Hall Martin, when members of more to the right in the Dáil fire it across, and he chips back saying it's always common sense with you guys, but it's something, a phrase that Simon Harris is quite comfortable with.
And it'll be interesting as this develops. And as you say, Micheál, we have to wait and see this legislation before the end of the year for a lot of the detail. But so far, the most vocal opposition I've heard has been coming from the Social Democrats and from the Labour Party. Sinn Féin obviously have issues with the migration pact, but in terms of the measures we would take ourselves here, it'll be interesting to see where they will end up standing on this legislation, especially given that Labour Party leader Ivana Bacic was saying recently, wasn't she, that they're on the same page as Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on this issue.
In terms of Sinn Féin, you mean? Well, I mean, Sinn Féin have been essentially making the point, Matt Carty being the spokesperson on this, that, you know, all of the issues essentially that Jim O'Callaghan has been talking about are issues that have failed to be addressed prior to this, and they're chastising the government really from one side. Then the Soc Dems and Labour are chastising them from the other side, which is that they're being over the top, they're being too tight, they're not acknowledging that there are people who are genuine cases and that we obviously need all these people in the economy as well. Now, in fairness, I suppose you'd have to say of the government that, I mean, even though Simon Harris was ham-fisted about it a few weeks back when he talked about migration, and he mixed up migration and asylum seeking in the one sentence when he was walking into government buildings one morning. But the government they do acknowledge, of course, that we need migrants in the country. We need migrant workers in the country. I mean, every hospital in the country, every sector of the economy, all of the tech economy, all of those areas, they're full of people who have come to Ireland to work and who have got very good jobs and have very good earnings in this country.
Just on Sinn Féin, actually, if I could come in there, I think they're walking a bit of a tightrope on this because, yes, of course, they want to criticise the government and they're criticising the government for delaying and bringing some of this in. But it's not actually criticising the individual measures. I think it's trying to speak to that broad spectrum of support that it has. We know it's been pinched on migration before in terms of its supporters. And I think it's trying to keep the arguments quite wide.
And if it remains as big an issue, that when it comes to unity on the left is going to be an interesting one, isn't it? And Sinn Féin trying to focus on the time it's taken to process applications and also the profits that are being made for those who are providing that direct accommodation for people in direct provision. Some of the most devastating critiques of this came from the Green Party leader, who said at its core, when you boil it all down, these are anti-integrationist measures.
The other minister, of course, making headlines this week, Micheál, is Transport Minister Dara O'Brien with his big transport plan. The independents and the backbenchers happy here, the Greens and the opposition left less
yes,
so?
Yes, because the independents get two things here. They get movement on the west when it comes to things like the Western Rail Corridor, and also that great central tenet of government when it came to a 2-to-1 ratio around public transport over roads. That has now died a death. But some big projects like Dart West and the like, they are going to be spread out longer and take a far greater amount of time to get over the line. But you can see a major policy shift here, and it is back to the roads.
Yeah, but the criticism as well coming from opposition, Sandra, was that a lot of, particularly the public transport issues like the Finglas Lewis, the Cork Lewis, the Navan Rail, the South East Railway Line, that they have been long fingered, or that at the very least there's a lack of ambition here.
Yes, the priority really seems to be on roads and getting those roads built. Public transport is being pushed out a lot further, and it is an enormous change from the previous administration. There is no question about that. There also seems to be, a lot of it seemed to be tailored towards the west, so TDs in the west and in the northwest, I think, very happy. A lot of projects in Donegal, Monaghan, Galway, a lot for Galway. But will Galway ever get the ring road? I mean, there's a weariness about seeing these projects being announced when they've been held up for so long.
There is a Minister of State in the Department of Transport from Galway, of course, in
curious
one
that.
Mr. Sean Kelly, but I'm sure he'll tell you that this is just done in a fair way right across the country. It is interesting that Galway ring road, I mean, that is another project that has been talked about for literally decades now.
It's in planning at the moment, isn't it?
It's in planning again. There was a previous planning application, and then there was one going back a decade or two ago as well. But it's a bit like what Pather Tobin was saying on Leaders' Questions today. He was talking about the Navan railway line, which only gets one single mention in this entire 24 billion euro plan that was published yesterday. And that's been talked about since 1984, he said. Noel Dempsey announced it, or was talking about it in 1984. Now, Aisling Dempsey, a generation later, is talking about it as well.
He had a good line about that, didn't he?
He did indeed, He was saying that somebody who started working back then will actually be probably retired from the workforce by the time that project ever sees the light of day.
And speaking of projects that are taking an awfully long time, another delay for the Metro, because Ranelagh residents, a number of them, bringing a judicial review against the plans that it should have its terminus at Dartmouth Square. I remember, do you remember the big controversy about the government's big planning bill? And it absolutely had to be passed before the last general election. And there were all kinds of arguments about the guillotining of that bill, and it was a big 700 and something pages,
massive,
wasn't it? And this was going to sort out all the planning issues, and that's why it was so urgent that it be pushed through, because it was really critical before the general election. This would be passed and give the governments the tools it would need to sort out planning. And you just wonder why. Was that act, did it not cover judicial reviews? Is there a
clearly
part
not.
Of that act in terms of judicial reviews that hasn't
Wait
been
a
implemented
it did,
yet?
Yes.
Cabinet dealt with this yesterday. Are you saying the government are not urgently looking at this? Actually, they are going to bring amendments to that bill, and they're going to progress them quickly, which essentially narrow the scope around judicial reviews and also would limit the grounds for further appeals onto higher courts if things are quashed on
which
procedural
would apply
grounds.
To...
But there's going to be amendments.
This would apply in future, though. It doesn't apply to anything.
I think in 2026,
I think these amendments will go further
will be
back.
Retroactive.
Yes. That
yeah,
is
that
what was
the announcement from
Cabinet,
James
yes.
Brown.
Yeah, this morning,
But surely that'll be challenged.
Yeah, you would imagine so. And a lot of the time the courts do strike down this type of thing. The judicial reviews part is curious. There was a section in the Planning Act that was passed on that.
I thought so. I thought I remembered that.
I think it was maybe commenced in the last 2 or 3 months, but they've obviously decided it's outdated already. And then we did hear from the Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, who was also mentioning doing something on judicial reviews in his department, and it seems that they're coming at this from all sides.
Well, let me in here, and I can definitively say to you that the infrastructure plan is going to Cabinet next week, and there'll be something about judicial reviews in that, quite a substantial amount amount, apparently.
So which, it goes to Cabinet. Does that mean we actually get to see it? Because we
It'll be published next week. Yeah, so it'll be published next week. So and I believe the changes there to the judicial review in that will be that, first of all, there will be a limit on how much can be spent on the judicial mm-hmm. review before the person taking it suddenly becomes liable for money. And secondly, there'll be a limit, there'll be a restriction on who's allowed to take the JR. They have to have some link to the project or interest in it that's particularly relevant before they can do that. So that's coming next week, apparently.
And of course, there have been a number of arguments being made recently that, you know, politicians are too quick to blame running to the courts and judicial reviews, that in fact a lot of these problems arise because developers haven't been operating within the proper development plans or the proper regulatory frameworks, and there's a lot of discussion backwards and forwards and all of that.
We should take bets here now, by the way, on the Metro North, when it'll be finished. What year do you think?
Joe, there's a fair chance I'll be well married by that stage. Just
Lahan, you're only a young fella, you'll see it.
Lahan will probably be on a walking frame by that stage.
You should take bets, I tell you. 2032.
I don't bet, Joe. Anyhow, let's talk
too soon, Joe.
Yeah, let's talk about nitrates. We've been did we get good news on nitrates, or is there a lot of devil in the detail yet?
Well, there's an awful lot of devil in the detail. So Michael McGrath said this morning that the European Commission is putting forward a proposal now. So, as you know, the Irish government have been going on about this for the last 2 years. It is an aim in the programme for government that they will do their best to retain the nitrates derogation. And the reason they want it, of course, is because the dairy industry here, which is worth billions and billions, it's very much based on being able to push that grass to grow, to feed the cows and produce the milk and produce the meat as well for the meat industry. Anyway, so the Commission says they're going to put a proposal now, and that will have to be voted on by the member states. And that will happen on the 9th of December. So the 9th of December will be the day that they'll finally hear about it. The big issue, though, is that the potential, it has already been said that the derogation will be tied to the Habitats Directive, so that every farmer and every catchment area will have to be apparently fully compliant with the Habitats Directive in order to get the derogation. And that, many fear, is going to add an awful lot of difficulty. I mean, will they have to be getting ecologists out, paying ecologists to come out on their farms? Will they have to, you know, take a whole different look, a whole different approach to the way they're farming, the way they're managing their land, etc., etc.? So, like you can even see from the IFA today, they've sort of half welcomed what the Commissioner said this morning, but they're very much cautious about what to be.
We'll see how all of that one develops.
I see, as Michael McGrath was kind of making an announcement in Leinster House, Barry Cowan from Europe, quick to respond on the Twitter machine, saying that is this necessarily news at all, and will there be so much conditionality that it won't be workable, and that needs to be out in the open. So I think even within Fianna Fáil, is Michael McGrath still in Fianna Fáil?
Well, he was getting lots of applause, wasn't he, in Leinster House today? He was visiting the Oireachtas with a delegation.
He had a delegation, quite emperor-like, as he walked through the corridors.
Let's talk about another minister who's been getting really a less than glowing report, really, from the Fiscal Advisory Council. And this, of course, is the new finance minister, Simon Harris. The Fiscal Advisory Council want to know, where is the medium-term spending plan, especially when government is budgeting, according to the council, like there's no tomorrow, and saving less and less of the windfall corporation taxes. So they're really putting it up to the new minister, aren't they, Sandra?
Yes. You can blame the old minister, though, can't you?
Yeah, initially maybe, but he was part of the government. Yes, it was a scathing critique. It really puts them at loggerheads straight away, and it puts Simon Harris on the back foot. I'm curious to know how their initial first meeting went, because before this review came out.
Apparently.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Because they had a private meeting in government buildings just after Simon Harris became the Minister for Finance. He met with Seamus Coffey, and you'd have to wonder how all of that went. Simon Harris, I think, well able to take this critique. And remember that when Pascal Donoghue exited, in some of his exit interviews, he said that there was no way he could have pulled back on the spending given the level of need out there. But of course, the key point with Simon Harris is about the tussle between him as a politician who wants to be popular, let's say. He's also a party leader with a duty to get votes for his party versus the caution that is required as the Minister for Finance. And that is going to be an ongoing issue.
And we've been hearing a lot from the chair of the Fiscal Advisory Council, Seamus Coffey, this week. But you have to wonder, Micheál, and they're obviously hugely concerned about the growth in spending, the fact that government is only aiming to try and bring it down to 6% this year. Yeah. And they don't even think they'll manage to do that.
Despite that being a big pledge down at the Fine Gael Think, and yes, something Pascal Donoghue was very detailed in his discussions about.
But what part of government spending would IFAC cut? Now, you can have a look at the 14 steps in Mount Merion and say that. Yeah. But on the other hand, you know, that's really small beer compared to nurses, teachers, doctors. You look at former Education Minister Helen McEntee and the big row she had about keeping the teachers she'd been allocated last year in this year's budget as well. So, what, you know, what should we be doing? Getting rid of those teachers?
Once you give something out, it's really incredibly difficult to pare it back. And that is the problem. And that's the problem the government has been facing in this ongoing row over the cost of living payments as well. Week in, week out, the opposition's still going for them over the fact that there was no once-off cost of living payments. Once you start doing something like that, it's very difficult to take them off the table.
Well, there is that question too, isn't there, about like credibility, and the supplementary estimate is a key part of how government is run now, and that runs to billions and billions. And I suppose as long as that money is available, that's going to keep happening. That's just the political reality.
Yes, and maybe as well, you know, you can say what part would IFAC cut, but I suppose IFAC would come back and say maybe, you know, it's not about cutting, maybe it's about taxing. And maybe if you want to be spending all this money, instead of dipping into your windfall taxes that should be going into long-term things, maybe you should be widening your tax base so that you've got a more secure tax system that can withstand all of these pressures and be able to keep going day to day. But we'll keep that argument for another day. Opposition, I notice, saying that the latest figures from the Rental Tenancies Board, Micheál, they're saying that proves their argument. Besides an increase in rents, 35% increase in termination notices. So they're saying that proves the argument they were making about James Brown's changes, that private landlords would be driven out of the market.
Yeah, and the government don't have a lot really to fall back on here. Simon Harris making the point today that there were 62% of properties that you didn't see an increase, rental properties, last year. But apart from that, everything does centre on that big VAT concession to developers who are building apartments, and also the hope that the new changes and the new system, when it kicks in fully next March, will stabilise the market. But if it doesn't happen, I mean, they're going to run into bother very quickly now. And what you saw today when those kind of devastating figures were presented to Simon Harris is just a screeching match over and back.
A few things that we really should say. We said a final farewell to my former colleague and that inimitable voice of David Hanley yesterday. And some more news today, Sean Donnelly, what would you call Sean Donnelly? Not just a cephalologist. What was he?
No, I mean, renowned kind of pollster and election analyst, and someone who really kind of demystified a lot of the process and a lot of the talk around elections. And so much so that he was fairly influential when it came to things like 1997, when Fianna Fáil decided that they would take his views on board. And essentially that meant selecting far fewer candidates and ultimately being more successful than Albert Reynolds had been in the previous election with a smaller vote. And that is central to John Donnelly's key critique of elections. And that is two things, the Donnelly rules. One is it all comes down to the first count, and you need two things on the first count. You need at least half a quota if you're going to be there or thereabouts at the end. And you also need to be in the frame, that is in one of the seats per constituency. In a three-seater, you have to be in one, two, three, or possibly four. If that doesn't happen on the first count, well, then you're in real bother. And that actually is about 90% accurate in every election since he came up with that way of looking at things.
And like David Hanley, such an inimitable voice. Where did he come from? How did he get involved in all of this?
Distinctive Donegal voice. He is a Dublin city engineer, civil engineer, working in water services, who kind of comes out of the woodwork in the mid-1980s when he's living in Dublin South West, which is the constituency of Mary Harney. So after the PDs are founded, he gets involved and he gets really interested in constituency polling and the like. And that builds an interest and a knowledge where he starts doing it for the PDs at a national level later. Then, as they begin to wind down, he also gets involved with Fianna Fáil on a professional basis and has his own polling business. But as well as just carrying out polls, there is more to Sean Donnelly in the sense of being able to analyse counts in a distinctive way and being so influential that his views on elections are taken on board by parties.
And finally, Sandra, the Ciarán Cóirle and the photograph that had her blushing orange?
Yes, this was a photograph that appeared on, I think Mary Lou McDonald tweeted it. It was Sinn Féin bringing forward a bill in relation to violence against women, and they were all wearing orange, including Verona was invited, Verona Murphy, in her capacity as Ciaran Corla. And she posed for the photograph, but all the Sinn Féin women around her and some men were holding a copy of the bill, so it looked like a party political photo because it was all Sinn Féin. She insisted afterwards that she thought it was going to be a cross-party type initiative, although it may not have passed her notice when she looked around that it was only Sinn Féin members. Maria Cahill came out on social media and criticised it heavily. The photo was withdrawn, but there was certainly a war of words over it and how Verona Murphy managed to land herself into that, because of course she has to be above that type of thing. She has to be neutral.
Okay. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you for your time. We leave you, get back to work. And we'll talk to you again next Thursday. Till then, from everyone on Your Politics, goodbye.